Welcome back to Word on the Hills with me, Gwyn Sheltimer, and my co-host Felicity Signal-Reed, and our guest this week, Ted Staunton. That was a wonderful reading you did just before the break, Ted. We're going to continue on the subject of YA fiction. So let's talk a little bit about the seven series, and we'll start first with the first book that you did in the series, Jump Cut. Can you tell us a little bit about what the seven series is and then about Jump Cut?
Sure. In a nutshell, the seven series was a great idea that was come up with by one of my colleagues, Eric Walters. He got the idea for the series. Seven stories, seven linked stories about seven grandsons who are asked sort of from the grave, as it were, each to do a different final task for their late grandfather. And Eric approached six other writers and he said, you make up the grandson. Some of them will be siblings, of course. They'll all be cousins. Send them anywhere in the world. You can make it comic. You can make it suspenseful. You can make it whatever you want it to be. He said, I'd love to see the stories, as I mentioned, take place all over the world. Love to see them linked together in some ways. Are they texting each other? Are they in and out of each other's stories? Are they emailing? Are there ways we can link them? And finally, he said, I want to make it so that you can pick up any book and it can be the first one. You don't have to read these in any kind of an order. So all of that was fascinating to everybody he approached. So my contribution, as you mentioned, was Jump Cut. And Jump Cut is sort of a comic adventure novel about one of the grandsons named Spencer, who I decided would be the nerdy grandson. I don't know why. Has nothing to do with me. And Spencer is kind of a film buff. And Spencer is asked by his granddad to track down an elderly film actress that the grandfather says was his favorite. And he leaves Spencer the money to get the best video camera he can. He asks Spencer to make a film of finding this old lady and getting her, finishing the film by getting her to give him a kiss on the cheek for the grandfather. Tell her, he says in his video, tell her she was my favorite actress. Well, Spencer finds the old lady, and only to find that this is the beginning of all kinds of things that he didn't expect, that leads him into a road trip in a stolen Cadillac with a baker who could be a mobster, a chihuahua, the old lady, her teenage granddaughter, and they're being pursued by a motorcycle gang, the mafia, and a Toronto street posse. That's it in a nutshell. It may not make sense, but it was fun.
Just a couple of complications there.
You know, I think it was Raymond Chandler, the famous mystery writer, who said, you know, when in doubt, have a man with a gun come through the door. Figure it out later. And that was my philosophy as I wrote this. So I had a lot of fun writing it. And it's been well received, so I'm hoping that readers had fun with it too.
They must have, because I believe it's been nominated for a Red Maple Award.
Yeah, that was very pleasing. In fact, mine was one of three titles from the series that were nominated for a Red Maple. Eric Walters' book, Between Heaven and Earth, and Sigmund Brower, my colleague, who wrote another one in the series called Devil's Pass. All three of us were up for the Red Maple. And that was fantastic, because that's a Reader's Choice Award.
Absolutely.
And
yeah,
just to get nominated means that thousands and thousands of kids are reading the books.
And not only read it, but they like it enough to nominate it. So that's special. Really special.
I was very touched by that, yeah.
But now there's another series, another round, let's say, in the seven series. So tell us about that.
Yes, we have all written sequels, and they'll be out October 1st. This time around, the seven grandsons learn some disturbing news about their grandfather's past. And in various ways, they set out either to learn more about it, to disprove this, to, in my case, to sort of just plain be silly. And Spencer quickly finds himself, Spencer, who by now has started going to film school, finds himself enmeshed in some intrigue involving his missing brother that seems to continually be reminding him of different spy movies that he has seen.
Sounds interesting. I know the first series was a lot of fun, so I'm looking forward to that.
Great.
And what are you working on now?
Right now, I'm working on a novel that, another mystery, a comic mystery, that is about a kid who is somewhere in grade 6, 7, or 8, and gosh, I don't want to give too much about it away, except that it involves mystery people, mistaken identities, and bank robbery.
Nothing like you've ever written before.
No, your standard combo, you know. Yeah.
That sounds like fun. Well, could you perhaps read to us a little from Coda?
Sure. Spencer's brother, Bunny, has gone missing. However, at this point in time, Spencer thinks Bunny has maybe just taken off with some disreputable friends he made in the first round of books. So their parents are away. Spencer is desperate to find his brother. He goes on the computer, and he hits the locator app for his brother's cell phone. The Baby Breeze Motel, weekly, monthly, AC, sat, TV, vacancy, sits crumbling in its parking lot like half a sandwich left at the back of a fridge. I think scuzzy is the technical word for this style. The app says Bun's phone is around here, somewhere. I was kind of hoping I'd see Bun skating on a frozen puddle or something, but that's not on, and he's still not answering either. All I can do is hit the locator tab on the app, walk past the rooms, and hope I hear his phone beep. I turn off the van reluctantly and climb out. It took another 3 tries to start it for this drive. I hope it starts when I need to get out of here. It feels colder by the lake. Up close, the Baby Breeze isn't exactly homey. Curtains are drawn across every window. The plastic chairs out front are magnets for cigarette butts and empties. 2 sorry cars are parked about 5 doors apart. Both of them look older than me. One has a flat tire. The O'Toole mobile fits right in. I hit the button on my phone and I start walking, trying to seem like just another wholesome teenager looking for harmless fun at a Fleabag motel. A faint beeping kicks in as I pass the second car. It gets stronger every step I take. So does a certain dense, skunky smell I've smelled before. Both are definitely coming from the end unit. I stop at the door and I knock. Nothing, just stink and beeping. Bun? I call. Bunny? A few rooms back, I think I see a curtain twitch. I ignore it and try the door. It's unlocked. I push it open. Instantly, the beeping gets louder. Weed stink gushes out on a wave of warm air. Lights are glowing over a small jungle of pot plants on one side of the room. Some kind of foil blanket hangs behind the curtains, duct taped to the wall, and the carpet is stained. Apart from the plants, the room is empty except for a ratty couch and a shiny pole that runs from floor to ceiling in the middle of the room. One end of a set of handcuffs is clamped around the bottom of the pole. I'm not even going to think about that. The phone beeps are coming from a kitchenette space behind the couch. Bunny! I try again, but I know nobody's home. Get the phone and get out, I think. I tiptoe fast to the kitchenette. Partway there, I wonder why I'm tiptoeing, but I do it anyway. And there's Bun's phone, beeping away on the floor by the counter. I'm just bending for it when I hear a rustling in the leaves behind me and a sound like a bullfrog on steroids opening an old trunk. I look over my shoulder. Looking back at me is an alligator. I don't hear myself scream, but I probably do. I do know that somehow I jump straight up onto the stamp-sized countertop and I teeter there, clutching the mini-cabinet fixed to the wall, my head scraping the ceiling. The gator or crocodile or whatever it is snorts, its black eyes gleaming at me, its front claws clack and scrabble at the cupboard doors under the counter while its tail thumps the back of the couch. I'm trapped. I could yell for help, but I'm thinking guests at the Baby Breeze are used to yelling from their neighbors. Cops aren't an option. Hi, I'm trapped by an alligator and a grow-op, and I'm looking for my brother who skipped his jail pass? I don't think so. Meanwhile, Bun's phone is still beeping, and I'm starting to feel how hot it is in here. Clutching the cabinet with one hand, I thumb my cell phone with the other. I call the only person who might understand. Amberlee answers on the second ring. I need some help. My voice only squeaks a little. I tell her what's going on. An alligator? She says. I can imagine her chin tucking way in. Or a crocodile. I say, I don't know, but it's one of them and it's big. Below me, there's more snorting and clacking and scrabbling. Then the beeping noise suddenly gets quieter. And I think it just ate Bun's phone. Okay, sit tight, Amberlee says. We'll think of something. Is there like a dog catcher in Toronto or anything? This isn't a dog! Okay, animal control? I don't know, for raccoons maybe. This thing probably eats raccoons. We're on our way. I don't think about the wee part. I got enough on my mind with a hungry crocodile that now beeps, not to mention worries that whoever owns the plants and the pet may show up and find me where I'm not supposed to be. By the time I finally hear a car pull up out front, I'm drenched in sweat. The place is overheated. I'm still trapped in my jacket. Plus, there's the little matter of being scared. The crocodile is still down below me waiting. Then car doors slam. I hear Amberlee's voice. In there! Footsteps. Amberlee and Toby peer in the doorway. Over here! I call as they take it all in. Amazing, Toby says. Plus a stripper pole and handcuffs. Where's the gator? Says Amberlee. Down there, I point. The crocodile does some huffing and shuffling at the sound of their voices. Okay, just stay where you are, Amberlee orders. It's one of those reminders you don't really need. Give me the bag, she says to Toby. No, I'll do it. Just give me the bag. We'll argue later. He hands her a plastic grocery bag. Amber Lee steps into the room. Toby comes in behind her, raises a video camera, sweeps the place. Amber Lee pulls a family-sized package of chicken parts out of it and rips the plastic off. Here, Gady Gady, she calls. Stomp your feet, she orders Toby. She does it, too. The crocogator scuttles around. Amber Lee throws a piece of raw chicken just past the couch. The gator oozes forward and the chicken is gone, just like that. It gives a prehistoric hiss. Good girl, Amber Lee says. Have another. She tosses another piece, this time at the open doorway to the bathroom. The gator slides for it, around where a bit of wall sticks out to make an alcove. There's a nasty snapping sound. Amber Lee heaves more chicken. From the sound of it, it lands in the bathtub. The gator's tail disappears around the corner, and there's a lot of echoey banging and thudding and snorting. Good for you, Amber Lee says. While you're in there, why not finish the rest? She heaves the rest of the chicken parts. I hear various smacks and splats. Then Toby dashes past her. I hear the bathroom door slam shut, trapping the gator. Oh, man. Thanks. I more or less melt off the counter. Amber Lee is wiping her hands on the couch. Why was that alligator beeping? She says. It's a long story, I say. This isn't the time for Peter Pan, Toby says. Let's get out of here.
What fun. Well, many thanks, Ted, for reading that and for joining us today.
You are welcome, Gwen. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. And to our readers, if you'd like to send any comments, suggestions of people we might interview in future programs, please write to us at wordonthehills@gmail.com. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you'll join us again next week.
Last word, if I have time, October 21st, Porto Public Library. All seven authors of the seven series will be there in the evening, I believe at 7 o'clock, doing a free presentation for families and anyone that's interested.
Perfect. Thank you.